What's up, everybody? Welcome to another out cold, ice cold, extra fly episode of Checkpoint AFK. I am your host, Norris Howard, here once again alongside my colleagues for this episode. We got Chad Callahan, we got Robbie Landis, and we got very special guests coming to us all the way from Las Vegas, Nevada, co-host of Checkpoint XP on campus. We got Jacob's brother in the house. Jacob Brothers, I don't know why my mouth did that. Jacob Brothers is in the house. What's cracking, bro?
What's up? I'm glad to be here.
All right, man. You know, it's really cool to have different people on AFK. We always like to reach out to our mass Rolodex of folks, and we decided to just bring on somebody that we talk to all the time instead of doing any actual real work. So it worked out for everyone. And I'm very excited, but as usual, what we like to do at the start of every episode of Checkpoint AFK is check our reviews. So since Callie Sloan is not with us here this week, falls to Chad. Chad, do we have reviews?
No, we don't.
Okay.
What the hell, Chad? We gave you one job.
Chad had literally one thing.
People aren't doing their job. I literally have one thing to do, and that's check to see if everyone else did their job, and they didn't. So I don't kill the messenger.
Chad's no longer in charge of reviews.
No, he is not in charge.
Fine, I don't want to be in charge. I was doing this as a favor.
It was doing us a favor, guys.
It was doing us a favor by logging on to the Apple Podcast reviews, so I guess that was a little too difficult for him. But anyway,
With
that said, though, you know, we want everybody out there. Everybody's at the crib, which makes it double stupid that we have no new reviews. That's okay, though. But we know everybody is at the crib because, you know, many states are still under lockdown, essentially. I know here in Michigan, our lockdown got extended to the end of the month. A lot of states are thinking about easing, easing restrictions and opening their states back up, which is a fucking stupid idea. I'm going to just go out there and say it's a dumb idea. We shouldn't do that right now. But y'all at the crib, and there's kind of only one esport really going on, a couple esports. You got, you know, Overwatch League is coaxing up to do their tournament for the month of May, and then you had Call of Duty League, and folks are still playing those, but I gotta get on my high horse for a second, and Robbie gonna hate me for this. Alright? But Evo got canceled, and I'm mad. Alright? Evo is moving to an online format, and I'm gonna just say this right now.
That's the reason to be mad. Not that it was canceled. I mean, that sucks.
No. You're absolutely correct. I would rather no Evo at all than to see them try to move a fighting game tournament online, okay? This is the worst idea humanly possible. Not because I think it can't be done, but there is no way to do it well, okay? No way to do it well. These are not MOBA teams where you got people sitting in team houses with fiber internet and, you know, dietitians. No, you're going to have
just Nintendo,
you know,
online.
Yeah, you don't have to have Long Island. You don't have to have Long Island Joe playing against Lil Majin, and even though that's Street Fighter and Tekken, you know, forgive me. But the point is you got two people who are going to have to play each other from completely opposite sides of the country, opposite sides of the continent, and somehow make it a competitively viable thing. Not possible, right? Every other esport has found a way to work, except for fighting games, and it is just frustrating to me because everybody's netcode is terrible, everybody's rollback is terrible, all of them, it's gonna be bad. So expect hilarity, expect foolishness, expect it to be a really tough thing to watch. But I'm gonna just go ahead and say this, man, this is another indication of how underfunded fighting games are and how it continues to get the short end of the stick when it comes to esports, flat out.
So why did you think that I was gonna hate you for talking about that?
Well, because you just hate when I bring up fighting games in general. But
this is a legitimate gripe. This one's fine.
All right, cool.
You get this one.
All right, I get this
one. As long as you
go, I'll give you this one.
I'll give you this one. All right, fine. But it is, and I'm absolutely frustrated with this because every year we talk about how much money League of Legends is bringing in, how much money Fortnite is bringing in, how much money Dota is doling out during the international, even though the international is canceled this year. So we hear about all this shit.
Delayed.
Right, delayed, whatever. We hear about all this stuff. And yet fighting games, which is the backbone in which all esports has been built off of, without it, esports would have no personality, nobody would care, all that bullshit that everybody tweets out and laughs at on Twitter would not be there if it were not for the foundation and the personality of fighting games, and yet nobody wants to come down and invest in them. You already got a cohort of people, because it's mostly black and brown people who are the fans of fighting games, and simply, they don't have the disposable income to go on and spend $40 on a skin for their, you know, favorite character. So you got to fund them other ways. So you got to look at these. You got to look at companies. You got to look at peripheral makers. They got to step up their investment if we want these scenes to continue, man. Because if not, I don't see how Evo can keep existing if we get to a point where a bunch of these people are gonna have to go and get regular jobs. You're not gonna.
Can I ask you something, Norris?
What's up?
Because here's other than League of Legends and the whole grand scheme of things, because that's its own area. All these other games that we mentioned, like Fortnite and Overwatch and all these, they're newer. Where most fighting games aren't like. I mean, there's newer versions, but there's not like. I can't think of one that's like really popular. At least that's like. Brand new. Do you think that if there was a brand new fighting game that like people just like got into, like Fortnite,
Riot's making a fighting game,
could change the pace for fighting games in general?
No, it'll change.
Like, could
the pace.
You think?
Here's what'll happen.
No,
Riot. Here's what'll happen. Riot will put out their fighting game. It's gonna be free to play. You're gonna pay for the characters that you want. You're gonna be able to earn in-game currency. It's gonna be the exact same model that all their other games are built off of, and people are gonna eat it up because that's a model that works for esports. So if they're gonna want it to be an esport, that's what's gonna happen, and it's gonna work. And everybody in the FGC at some point is gonna migrate over to that game. And yes, a community will suss itself out, but Mortal Kombat's gonna lose people, Street Fighter's gonna lose people, Guilty Gear's gonna lose people, every game out there is gonna lose people because the money is gonna be at Riot's fighting game. Period.
True. Well, I guess period. My question was more like fighting games in general. Do you think that would be the resurgence of fighting games, which might maybe...
It's not that fighting games need a resurgence. No, I mean, they're as healthy as they've ever been.
Yeah.
The problem is... that fighting games, unlike other esports like League of Legends or Overwatch or CSGO, have a shorter lifespan because when new games come out, they get supplanted so easily. Mm-hmm. And it makes it a risky investment for companies outside of the developers themselves. And honestly, I mean, I think it's probably even one of the reasons that you see the developers themselves, you know, beyond maybe like Capcom, that are eager to actually put their own money forward for
it's
it
absolutely
as well.
True.
You know,
absolutely,
it's going to work for Riot because Riot has Riot money, but no one's going to come and invest the same amount into Mortal Kombat as they do into Overwatch when Mortal Kombat might not even be at Evo next year.
Well,
it's not going to be at Evo this year, which is again nuts.
Exactly the point.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
so
I guess my thought was that if Riot shows that this is an option, like this could be good, and then there's a new one coming out, like, oh, maybe people might like jump on the bandwagon of like the alternative, but maybe not.
Well,
I don't know.
Here's what's gonna happen.
People might jump on Riot's bandwagon, but it's not gonna do anything for like the anime fighters.
No, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All fighting games have their own barriers as well, which also always complicates the issue, because even like Dragon Ball FighterZ, which was a new fighter and it does very well, it still has those same barriers of like, I looked at that game and I was like, I can't play this. And every fighter kind of has to do that thing of like, oh, we're all approachable. We all have a great training mode.
And the
I feel like that kind of complicates it as well.
The barrier for entry for fighting games is high. As somebody who loves fighting games, yes, it is. But Chad, to your point, what's going to happen is every community is going to lose a little bit to Riot. When the new Street Fighter comes out, invariably, the Street Fighter heads will go play it. Period. They'll go play it. But you're going to see... a lot of these games relegated to side tournaments. Guilty Gear, if Riot's game comes out and it's fire, you're not going to see an anime fighter, or you're not going to see like Guilty Gear on main stage. One of those big name games is not going to see main stage, and that's effectively going to kill that community, which sucks, but it's just the way it's
gonna go. Well, I mean, argumentatively, like, here's my thought on that, though. How many big right now FGC games are there? There's like, what? There's Tekken.
Is Tekken Mortal Kombat, Tekken, Street Fighter, Smash,
Dragon Ball,
and Smash. Okay, so there's about five esports-ish versions of FGC, where, like, I guess you could argue that, like, first-person shooters are all the same, but they're not really. Like, there's only one version of, like, Overwatch. I mean, there's Paladins, but, like, there's Overwatch and stuff like that, and that's, like, the big esport. And then there's League of Legends, which is the big esport. I mean, Dota 2, but
League is the MOBA.
Right, so my thought is, like,
Call
for
of Duty
that...
is the first-person shooter. Yeah.
Right. So, like, I mean, I guess in the grand scheme of things, it makes sense for one to kind of be the game then. Like, and that would be, I mean, what might
that's how they're able to create their esport.
Right. So I think that might be the where the FGC kind of has that issue, is because it's like, well,
it's so
I have to compete against five other companies. Why am I going to put so much money
but
into this
the,
if I have to come,
issue,
if I have to spread it out?
That, but the issue with that is that if that happens, there's a reason why there's only two MOBAs on the market. Two.
Right.
That matter. There's two MOBAs on the market that matter. You know, there's two first-person shooters on the market that matter. Right? There's a ton of them, but there's two that matter. I can come up with at least six or seven fighting games that have contributed with sizable communities and, you know, really, really innovative ideas, at least. And so it sucks that you have a genre of games that, as Robbie said, is super healthy, but still continues to suffer from underinvestment. And I get your point. Maybe it needs to centralize. Maybe there needs to be the game, but I don't want to see that shit. And I definitely don't.
I think as a viewer, as a fan, that would suck, but...
But Riot about to get enough money. Between League and Valorant, they got enough money. Let somebody else
do it. And Runeterra, don't even forget about that. Runeterra is still doing great.
Runeterra, let's not even go there. But anyway, we're going to take a slight break where we had quite the past 24 hours with the Xbox 2020 announcement. We are going to talk all about that coming up on Checkpoint AFK. Stick around.
Speaking of it, BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Exciting too. Another big announcement that just came out. The Dallas Fuel and the Houston Outlaws, we alluded to this last segment, the Lone Star Showdown. This is the first annual presentation of this. The two teams coming together to bring the Overwatch world and the esports world three solid weeks of competitive gameplay against these two rivals. And what's really interesting and unique about this is that following this up after each week on Saturday, there'll be a three-part docuseries that kind of follows the behind-the-scenes of what's going on with these rivalries, you know, what the players are experiencing, you know, what they're feeling, how they're dealing with that, to give you that sort of human element. Something that, personally, I think that all of esports is missing and definitely needs to do more of. But Jake, you also actually get to narrate this this docuseries.
Yeah, I think it'll be really fun because, you know, I know like a lot of the players personally, and I've always liked this sort of content, you know, like getting to know people on a personal level, showing that to the fans and just deepening the connection between the fans and the players. You know, I really like this type of content in traditional sports, and I feel that it's not something that is limited to traditional sports. Like it's a human thing, you know, like no matter who you are, what you're interested in, you always are most interested in the people behind it. I think that's just human nature. And this is a series that can hopefully, you know, highlight that, can serve that need.
All right, well, we'll definitely be talking about that more, and I look forward to seeing what comes of it, guys. Coming up next, we're going to break down some of the must-see matches of the week coming up here on the Owl's Nest. Stay with us.
Hey, it's Weird Beard from Checkpoint XP reminding you to make it blue. Help say thank you to our heroes on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic. Whether you're streaming, drawing, singing, cooking, or anything else, showcase your talents and hashtag light it blue. You can find more information at our website, checkpointxp.com.
Back to Checkpoint AFK. It's your boy Norris Howard alongside Chad Callahan and also Jacob Brothers, Robbie Landis, who has the sniffles a little bit, but we're gonna be all right. If you haven't already, make sure you go over to our website, checkpointxp.com, where you can find all our cool stuff. You can find all of our articles, repository of our shows, interviews, all this great stuff. You go over to checkpointxp.com. Now, the Xbox 2020 announcement went down this week. It is one of our first true looks at the next generation of video games. Xbox decided they had to be the first out of the gate. They've already been the first out the gate to divulge solid numbers about the Xbox Series X, their next console, and they are also now first to divulge what games will be coming to the system. Now, the stream itself has polarized gamers once more, and the feel of the console wars is back, baby, is back. I thought, you know, last time we went through this, Sony came out the gate strong, but it feels right now that the console wars is back. So before we get to that point, I want to talk a little bit about what was actually announced. So we had a vast number of games that were announced. I think the one that stuck out to me was probably the Yakuza beat 'em up. I thought that was incredibly
Rise of the Dragon. Like, is that what it was, I think?
Yeah, Yakuza
Like a Dragon. There you go. Yeah.
That was really, really interesting. Out of the games that were announced, was there anything that piqued you guys' interest?
Vampire! Which one? What'd you say, Jacob?
I just said all the gameplay. All the gameplay was just electric. It just gave me a real understanding of the future of Xbox.
Before we get to the gameplay there, because for me, here's the thing. Watching all of it, we know that the Xbox Series X is apparently going to be the most powerful console ever created. All these teraflops, blah, 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 blah. Everything that I saw looked beautiful. Like, I'm not going to try to deny that. The graphics were amazing. But I can't remember, had you guys not just listed off a few of them there, I don't think I would have been able to tell you a single one of those games or any that I am excited for, and part of that might have been due to a lack of gameplay and seeing what they actually look like or what they're actually gonna be. But once again, even though they were the first out the gate, they showed all these gorgeous looking games, I don't really care. And here's the thing, even if they had a great game, all right, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, that's one that I'm actually interested in. But not only can I get it on PlayStation if I want to, I can also get it on PC. So again, I have to ask the question, if I don't already have an Xbox, why do I care?
Why am I buying?
I think the only reason you would is because of the Game Pass. If they're available.
But with Game Pass, which, you get it on PC,
yes. Like, well, that's not like my point. Like, you're still getting the money through Xbox. So Xbox doesn't give a fuck if you're gonna play through Xbox or PC because it's Microsoft.
Yes, they do. When they're putting out a $600
big ass refrigerator.
Then why would they put on your desk? No, Chad. Whatever you're about to say.
I'm sure they care, but at the same time, I think they're the most aware of like consoles kind of just eking out of the equation here soon. Let I think you, that that's no, why listen. They're doing this PC no, thing. Listen.
That's fine.
That's why the Xbox Series X looks like a fucking PC tower.
Listen,
it's gotta be. Come on,
that's
now.
Fine. But I'm telling you now, you're not gonna just throw away millions of dollars in development costs for a piece of hardware to just poo-poo it away and say, "Oh, we want you to just go and get it on PC anyway." Nobody's gonna do that. Nobody, right?
I think it's really just to keep up with Sony and until they are outed.
No,
ousted. Yeah.
No.
I mean,
but what I'm telling you, Chad, is that is a stupid business decision. That's a shitty business decision. Like, straight up, as a hardware manufacturer, you want to make money on your hardware. Flat out. But I got a list of games here. We're just going to run through them right quick to see what was exactly announced, right? And then we'll go into our sort of theory as to where Microsoft stands after this particular stream. So you have Bright Memory Infinite, which was a first person shooter style game, Chinese developer. You had Dirt 5, Scorn, which looks like an H.R. Giger Prometheus kind of.
I think if you were a fan of Dead Space, you'll probably like whatever
it was goo and phalluses everywhere. So it is Giger to the maximum. You had Chorus, which was a protagonist who was connected to her spaceship or something like that. You had Madden, whatever. You had Vampire the Masquerade, which did look interesting. Vampire the Masquerade still looked pretty interesting. So there's that. You had Call of the Sea. You had The Ascent, which was like a Diablo meet cyberpunk kind of thing. The Medium, which is coming from the creators of Silent Hill. That looked interesting. Scarlet Nexus, Second Extinction, Yakuza Like a Dragon, and Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So out of that, you really only got one truly AAA big studio game in that announcement, which is Assassin's Creed, which last week they already did a big announcement and revealed a little bit about the game. From there. So, from that list, I mean, I'm with Robbie. Assassin's Creed is something I was already interested in, probably already going to buy.
And honestly, most of the games on here are the same way.
Yeah. And so, with those announcements, let's get to the nitty-gritty of why everybody was upset, which is gameplay does not mean in-engine trailer. Two different things. Two different
things. But you see it when you're playing the game, Norris.
Two different things, okay? There could be bullshot. That could be stuff upscale. That is literally just a video that's playing using the engine. That's all it is, dude. And when we say gameplay demonstration, I want to see the UI, the UX, guy sitting there in the room holding the sticks playing the game. That's what I want to see. When people say they want to see gameplay, that is what we're talking about. We're not talking about a trailer. So for all of the Xbox out there, and I love Microsoft. I think they've done great work. The Game Pass flat out is the best value for video games out there. Period, flat out. But they dropped the ball on this one, y'all. They dropped.
Hold your companies accountable for the bullshit they say. All right.
Yeah.
There was nothing wrong with the Xbox 2020. Like, overall, the presentation was fine. But you don't get to say, "Take a look at this gameplay." Every other clip, and then not show gameplay. And Norris, you had said something earlier about how because we had put out a meme on our social media that was like, you know, when Xbox says there's gameplay and it's the lady like looking like real hard because she can't see what they're talking about. And you said that it feels like it reignited the console wars. I kind of get where you're coming from that. But what it feels like more to me is all the losers out there who still run around waving the Confederate flag, because look, Xbox and Microsoft lost the console wars. That's That's just not even a fact that you can debate.
Yikes. I'm not sure I would compare them to the Confederacy, Robbie.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a bold statement, but all right.
I said what I said, because those people out there trying to continue fighting this war, you lost, all right? You lost.
Oh, I got what you're saying.
Sony came out on top, and going into this next generation, they're going to continue to be on top because Microsoft isn't doing anything different.
Let me play devil's advocate, because said the same thing about the PS3 in that generation. The 360 was a superior system that had superior games, a better user experience, more well-supported online system, and everything about it created a better ecosystem for gamers. Everybody said Sony is over. The PS4 is done. Dead on arrival. The Xbox One is going to thrash it.
Sure.
And maybe it could have. But what happened is that Xbox was first and came out of the gate with a trash press conference. Mm-hmm. It was god awful. Okay, it was the Kinect is bundled in with the system and you can't not use it, and it's online all the time, and you can't share games, and your Kinect has to be voice commanded, and it's $100 more expensive. Oh, you could watch TV, you could watch your sports, you could watch ESPN, you could watch HBO. They spent 40 minutes of the hour long thing talking about how nothing about video games. And then when they got to the video games, it was just okay. And then PlayStation, as you know, has their mic drop moment. So what I'm saying is that, Robbie, while in earnest, I do agree with you, it is not impossible that this system can't turn it around for Microsoft. It's not impossible. Maybe.
First of all, I'm going to give you a 9 out of 10 for your Xbox impression there. It was pretty good. But this is, I think, the difference, right? When you look back at whatever the shortcomings of the PS3 may have been compared to the shortcomings of Xbox recently, you realize the last generation of Xboxes, most retailers in Japan didn't even bother stocking them. Say what you will about the PS3 generation, it never got that bad to the point where in Japan, retailers are like, and it even worth us for us to put these on the shelf.
Although Xbox is more popular in North America than in Japan.
I'm just saying, man, Microsoft in the Xbox is so far behind the curve at this point. You're right, Sony can still screw it up, but man, would they really have to try to screw this one up?
It really feels that way. It feels like Sony's gonna have to have a real poor showing for folks not to be all over their system. And let me put it this way. And I said it via social media, and Robbie mentioned a meme we put out. That the people went at me on everything under the sun about popular games, about this, about that. Let me just be very frank and be very straightforward when I say this. Numbers do not lie. Men lie. Women lie. Mm-hmm. Companies lie. Numbers don't lie. And the numbers have said the PlayStation 4 is one of the highest selling consoles ever made by human hands. And so if you're going to make the argument about if Xbox can really come back, they gotta come harder than what they showed last time, man. This stream is not getting anybody excited about anything that Xbox is doing, flat out. Not when all that stuff is gonna be multi-platform anyway.
That's the main point. To me, that's still the biggest downfall, is the fact that I don't have to buy an Xbox to be able to play them, right? But I do think that they are still going in the right direction. In the past few years, we've seen them scoop up all of these, the Microsoft Studios, you know, little bits and pieces. You know, they have 343, they have Ninja Theory. So they've started. Yeah, exactly. So they've started, you know, a few years ago to build up the companies that they have in their repertoire. So I think that if some of these games do hit off big, and whatever the next iteration of them, so, you know, in another maybe 3-4 years, they start to build on what some of their exclusives are or will be, that's a step in the right direction. But personally, as a consumer, I love the fact that I don't need an Xbox to be able to play them. Great for the consumer. But I do think that it does hold back the performance of the Xbox itself.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so we are going to leave the conversation there. If you want to go check out the super fiery, ridiculous, completely mind-numbing conversation that we have via social media
Twitter.
On Twitter, please go to @CheckpointXP. You'll see it. Trust me. It's completely just a cesspool.
We'll say one thing on that. Two things on this that kind of irked me about the tweet before we get off of it. There's one part that really it was clearly about how the meme is clearly about how Microsoft said gameplay and then they didn't really show any. And then people in the comments would be like, Sony fanboys clearly not realizing that these are all third party games. I'm like, what about this meme didn't stated that this was about that? Like, I have no idea where you're coming from. Just mad at everyone arguing and then you just decided to throw it out on our meme. I don't get that.
Do you know what it is? It's that thing where you're so guilty of something that you end up confessing it anyway, right? So
right.
It's like your girlfriend walks up to you and she goes, oh wow, I saw your friend Jessica the other day. You go, I didn't make out with her.
Yeah, and
it's
then
the second
thing, I just love how Chad's getting so defensive. He's like, don't you ever talk to me and my memes again.
Yeah, I was proud of this one, damn it. But I just got irritated because people were, I was like, I will argue, like I was willing to like get on there and like talk to people, but like when you came out with that, I was like, I don't know what to say because this isn't anything that I was saying in this meme. But the
no,
second
Chad,
thing that,
your shit post did exactly what it was supposed to do, man.
I guess.
Yeah,
it just irked
you
me.
You made
like
some
it.
Noise.
When you shit post, you can't be mad when flies show up. But anyway, and, we're going to end that conversation on that, and then we're going to have a really, really great talk about Streets of Rage 4, which is why the young homie Jacob is here, because we needed to get an opinion from the youngsters on what this game really means. So we will be right back with more Checkpoint XP. Or wrong, Checkpoint AFK, stupid.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Oh, we have an unprecedented outbreak.
Thousands of us walking the earth.
We might die at any moment.
Because we're under attack.
In which case, we must act fast.
Doctors are trying their best.
Working long hours and
always sacrificing
their health
to protect you.
Well, I'd very much like to thank them.
Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Wait a minute.
What's the prognosis?
It's still changing.
So we have a novel virus and no vaccine at this time.
What should we do?
We gotta get everybody else back into the houses. We gotta keep them there.
In other words,
this is our lockdown, right? What that means is
stay in your homes, make no attempt to reach loved ones,
and take a long nap.
You can count me out.
You can count me out too.
Some people are immune to good advice.
You know what I mean?
Those idiots.
I just need to make sure you fully understand.
Let's recap.
I'm begging you.
Stay inside.
Wash your hands.
And make sure you
got 10 feet of personal space around you.
Stay away from me. Stay away from me.
I didn't hear you wash your hands.
So think on this, lads.
When you're home watching TV.
Think about the
medical stuff.
Working for you. So I'm asking you.
Stay home.
In isolation.
To stop the virus.
All right, I'll do it.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
You stay classy, planet Earth.
We're back with more Checkpoint AFK. Your host, Norris Howard, here alongside with the crew. And, you know, amidst all the craziness of the Xbox conversation and fanboys tearing each other's throats, gamers coalesced around one game over the past couple weeks that pretty much everybody has come to the general consensus is an amazing experience, and that's none other than Streets of Rage 4. It's a game that came out via Dotemu, a company out of France, that has taken it upon themselves to revive this great beat-em-up series and really put out what feels like a labor of love, a really, really great game. I myself have beaten it countless times, and we got Jacob in here because I am somebody who remembers the Streets of Rage series when it first came out. I've got a piece on it on our website, Checkpoint XP, all about how Streets of Rage is a source of bonding between me and my dad. It was one of the first video games I sat down and beat from front to back in one sitting. And I would love to get the opinion, Jacob, of somebody who literally just was not around when this series really first came out. And
I mean, yeah.
And doesn't really have the context for, you know, the time in which it was released, why the soundtrack was so important, why people really use it as a touchstone as to why gaming is great. So why are you such a fan of this game?
Okay, so important backstory for me is that I am the sole champion of the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise. And I also care about video game history. So I've always been a Sega fanboy. So I've played all of, I've touched, and when I say touch, I mean barely touch, all of these games just to say that I've played them. So I've played like a stage of old Street Fighter. I've played like a stage of Echo the Dolphin, kind of a thing, right? So when Streets of Rage 4 is announced, and I'm like, oh, this might be sick because I can play it as beat 'em up. It'll have the nice modern touches, and this game comes out and it is incredible. It's so fun. Like it uses the retro without leaning on it, which I think is really cool because, like, you know, it's animated so well and the animation is probably my favorite part of the game, but you can also still see the machine of the game when you play it because it is retro, which I think is really nice because, like, when you're fighting a boss and the game is so fair too, and you fight a boss, you're like, okay, this specific animation means X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
While in other games, like say like a Kingdom Hearts or something, you have to look a little bit harder for that kind of a thing.
Yeah. It's still really gamified. Like it's there's animation loops. There's, you know, every boss has tells. Like it's old school through and through.
Like it's such a direct game because of its roots, which I think is so great because, you know, you just play these 12 stages. You go to arcade mode, you play them again. You want to unlock the characters? Just play the game. All the characters have their moves and their combos. And while I do think that the old Streets of Rage are so important, I think the modern touches is what makes it so popular in the modern day, right? Because, like, the special moves weren't a thing back in the day, right?
No, not at all. I mean, you had your A button moves, which is, like, what you use, like, triangle for now. But that's it.
Yeah, and so when you have, like, these special moves, it makes it so much deeper. Like, you have Cherry, and who's the best character, I can confirm. Her kit is just so diverse in a way that the older games just couldn't be, and that's not anything to hold against the game because it's an older game. But I feel like it was able to show the retro in a way like Sonic Mania could, where it's like, here are all the good things about this game, but in a setting where it's more enjoyable.
I'm so happy.
Even more enjoyable in the modern setting.
I'm so happy you brought up Sonic Mania because to me, it feels like there are so many games, especially from Sega in particular, that if it just got the modern polish thrown on it, it would be on a whole separate level. So it's like, I love Sonic Mania for the fact that I'm not a big Sonic fan. I'm not a big platformer fan at all. But Sonic was one of the few platformers I did play back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And everything about Sonic Mania, I love. I love the music. I love the stage design. I love the changes that they made. I love everything about it. And I think when you take something that already worked for so long, albeit, you know, whether it be Sonic or Streets of Rage or Final Fantasy, whatever it may be, and you can say, you know, it's not about making this quote-unquote better, but we can make this modern. I think that's a real, real strength of that game because when I played through it, I knew it wasn't going to feel like how it felt the first time I played it, flat out.
But for Streets of Rage or Mania?
For Streets of Rage, flat out, because I have so much personal memory and emotion attached to Streets of Rage 2 in particular. But at the same time, I found myself very almost emotional playing it because I've never before said, yo, I can't wait till quarantine is over so I can go over to my dad's house and play Streets of Rage 4. That is like at the top of mind the moment I started the game. And it was like I was transported back to that time in the best way possible. So I'm a big fan of this game, and it seems like everybody else is too.
Well, yeah, I can relate to your playing with another person piece too, because my girlfriend doesn't play games at all. I was like, hey, this is Streets of Rage. It's also on Game Pass, like, which was the best part of the whole deal. And I was like, we're going to play this game. Literally, all you do is press this button to beat people up. And she was like, word. And now she'll come over. She's like, so we playing Streets of Rage? Like, the game is so approachable that everyone can enjoy it. And that's, granted, the strength of the genre. But I think what Streets of Rage 4 shows us is that if someone who's not Sega makes a Sega game, it'll probably kick ass. I think we've seen that at this point. Like, if someone announces a Golden Axe game, it'll probably be great.
Yeah, but it can't be made by Sega. I agree with you. And you know, it's funny because that's the same thing with myself and my fiance, is that she is not a gamer as well either. But I popped in River City Girls one day, and now all of a sudden she was looking at me like, what are we gonna play? We gotta beat the boss today. We need to beat it today. And I'm like, yo, okay, this is you kind of see this appeal. So I agree with you that I think that this is such a great game, and I really wanted the perspective of somebody who didn't the nostalgia wasn't gonna be the drive.
Yeah, the nostalgia's not there at all.
Yeah, the nostalgia. Yeah,
I have a question for you guys, because I myself haven't played Streets of Rage yet, although I did play it, you know, growing up. Streets of Rage 3, I think, was the one that I sank the most time into. And my question is obviously the fact that this did amazingly well, despite not being updated for the current generation, right? I think a lot of people think that as consoles and graphics and gameplay gets better, that all these games have to evolve along with it, right? Sonic was a game that was not able to do that, you know, going into like Dreamcast and stuff like that. Sonic going into like the 3D realm was not as good as what the original Sonic games were.
Sonic Adventure 2 is better, but go on.
It just wasn't, okay? But now here you have Streets of Rage 4, you know, some 20, 30 years later, relying on the exact same formula in the age of, you know, the PS4 and 3D graphics and ray tracing and all this. So it succeeded. And my question to you is, why do you think that more games don't just try to rely on their roots and just put out the same game but with a modern touch that worked, you know, 20, 30 years ago?
I think
it's really a case-by-case thing. Like, Sonic had, like, an identity crisis. Right, like, because in that time period, the new future was 3D. So it's like, how do we take this game and make it 3D? You have to change a lot of things. While a game as old as Streets of Rage, like, the beat-em-up genre is so straightforward. It's like, you just got to punch people. Maybe you add some flashier moves. Like, adjusting that formula wouldn't benefit the game.
I would argue... Beat-em-ups can still exist in 3D as well. You know, one of my favorite beat-em-up games was... another one that I loved was Fighting Force. Was a great one.
Oh, great game, Fighting Force.
I mean, you said that Sonic. I was gonna say, you said Sonic like had a struggle, like had a little bit of identity crisis. But like, if you think about it, Mario is pretty much a side scrolling kind of game, and they pretty much almost seamlessly went into 3D.
There are a lot of games that did RPGs. You know, the Final Fantasies, they did as well. But some games weren't able to make that jump. Sonic, I think, was obviously one of the bigger examples, but again, with something like Sonic Mania, they did eventually realize, you know what, let's just make the old Sonic game, and it works.
It wasn't necessarily
so now that.
We've
seen that.
It was a little bit more than that.
Because Sonic Adventure games 4 are great. Sonic Adventure 1 and 2 are great. Great games.
Yeah, that is true.
Unequivocally great games. But to Jacob's point, and I agree, is that the beat-em-up genre is very much so straightforward that you really don't need to do too much else to it, right? It's like baseball. The rules have been the rules since, like, 1919. Like, you haven't really, outside of designated hitters, you haven't changed much about baseball in almost 100 years. So you have that concept with it, and you really don't need to change it, and you can if you want, as opposed to platformers and shooters and so many other games where they felt like they had to do something else. There's like space shooters. They were like, there's no way we can have a space shooter on a 2D plane anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, everything has to be in a 3D space, and it has to be that way. When they had so many great 2D shooters that they could have just recreated and remade, that would have been great games. But the biggest thing, Robbie, that I think is when you have certain franchises and they are known for certain things that aren't necessarily the gameplay, it is a lot easier to recapture that feeling. Sonic and Streets of Rage in particular are known for their music, and all you got to do is create a halfway decent game, and if you can catch the tone of that soundtrack, people are going to love that game. Period.
Sonic Heroes.
Period. Flat out.
And another big thing for me is I think we underestimate how much indie games impacted just the entire game industry. Because like Sonic Mania and Streets of Rage 4 did so much better because people are now receptive to those kinds of games. Like if a Streets of Rage 4 came out in, let's say, like 2004, it would have been a 3D game.
Yeah.
Because that's just how those games were. But now that we get all of these 2D games, all of these visually different games, all these pixelated games, now we can do these like retro throwbacks or retro continuations, and people are just much more receptive to that idea. I think
you could also add in Twitch too, because people are more willing to try out games, and they're like, "Oh, that actually looks like fun, and I might try out this 2D side scroller." That like, because like most of the younger generation, like 15 and under, probably aren't even going to touch that unless like one of their favorite streamers touches it.
Yeah, and I think the third factor that we got to put into the mix is the Switch by itself, the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, 1,000%,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I will say Switch. I won't even touch half these games unless it's on the Switch, because like I don't know what it is about playing like side scrollers on the computer, but
yeah.
I can't. My body just shuts down and doesn't want to.
It's the form factor for throwback games and older games moves well to the Switch in a handheld, and so it just simply works. Like for me, I can't play an RPG on the Switch. I still gotta finish Octopath Traveler. Haven't finished it because playing an RPG on the Switch.
Well, that game has some issues.
I just can't do it. It just makes my fingers hurt, my head hurt. I don't want to do it. I want to play Fire Emblem so bad, and I'm gonna power my way through it. But I just don't.
Why can't you just put it on the TV and then just use the regular controller?
I don't want to do that.
Dude, that point, it literally had the option. A different machine, except for Octopath.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things where absolutely I could, but I just rather play it in the handheld. But you know, I think Streets of Rage 4 is a perfectly good example as to when you take good ideas and you make a leap of faith, gamers will reward you for it. And if you stay true to the ethos of your game franchise, people will love you for it. I am looking at so many franchises when I say that, and Final Fantasy is one of them.
I was about to say Final Fantasy VII right now. I was missing on that last episode, and I'll just add my 2 cents real quick. It's just like I got the feelings that I got when I first played that game when that game started. So good job to them. Good job 1,000% to them.
Absolutely, because they still change things, but they stayed true to the core essence of what made that game and that world special, and we see the same thing.
They made it fun.
And we see that now with Streets of Rage 4 as well. But that's going to be it for this week. Checkpoint XP. I keep messing that up. That's going to be it for this week's Checkpoint AFK. I'm so used to doing this for On Campus. But that's going to be it. We thank Jacob.
Jacob's fault.
That's what it is. Jacob's here. I see his face, and I think I'm on campus. But that's going to be it for the episode this week. We hope you guys come back next week for more Checkpoint AFK. We are going to have a ton of fun, ton of news, and as a Summer Games Fest from Jeff Keighley, that's one thing we didn't touch on. The young homie Jeff Keighley once again becoming the Ryan Seacrest of video games and saving summer video game announcements single-handedly and saying, that he is putting out Summer Games Fest. Maybe that's what we'll talk about next week, because as time goes along, we're going to be getting more and more announcements pretty much from here until the end of the summer. So make sure you stay glued to Checkpoint AFK and CheckpointXP.com for all your announcements. So, for myself, Norris Howard, Chad Callahan, Robbie Landis, and Jacob Brothers, that's going to be the show. Have a good one. Stay safe and wash your damn hands.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.